So today we'll just get started. I'll describe the application of a novel statistical approach for identifying the transmissibility of a pathogen within households using data from Los Angeles County, California. I have no relationships to disclose. After first being identified in Mexico City in late April 2009, the pandemic influenza A, H1N1 2009 virus spread around the globe within 2 to 3 months. Throughout the spring and summer of 2009, public health practitioners and researchers asked many questions related to the transmission potential of this novel pathogen. The answers to these questions would directly inform, among other things, decisions regarding the allocation of public health resources and personnel, policies related to isolation, quarantine, and behavioral modification interventions, and plans for the development, distribution, and delivery of a vaccine once it came around. The previous work with influenza has implicated that the household is a key venue for sustaining transmission within the community. Early understanding of the transmissibility of an epidemic infection in key venues, such as households and schools, is a crucial step toward informing efforts to maintain a healthy community. First, we'll consider sort of what public health researchers can typically quantify the transmissibility of an infectious disease like pandemic H1N1 in close contact groups. When considering household transmission of pandemic H1N1, a susceptible member of the household, represented here by individual SI in white, is considered exposed to two potential sources of infection. Other infective members, if present, represented by this individual IJ in black, or sources located in the external community. The preferred measure of a pathogen's transmissibility is the secondary attack rate, or SAR for short. We broadly define the SAR as the proportion of household members, SI, who develop pandemic H1N1 as the result of exposure to a single IJ. I say broadly defined because several assumptions, a number of assumptions, must be made to estimate this quantity, and the value of the estimated SAR will depend, of course, on the nature of these assumptions. I won't go into that really today. To estimate the household secondary attack rate for our study, we use maximum likelihood methods to fit an extension of the chain binomial transmission model, as described by Young et al. In 2006. It's quite an old model. This extension incorporates information about the time course of the outbreak within households into the estimation of the SAR. The distribution of the lengths and of the infectious period, incubation, and latent periods are assumed known for pandemic H1N1, and we assume that all contacts between individual infective cases and susceptibles within the household are approximated by the observed data of whether or not these individuals are both in that household on a given day. This model accounts for exposure to sources of infection located outside of the household, multiple generations of infection within the household, and ascertainment bias due to the household selection procedures, which are always a problem. Early estimates of the household secondary attack rate for pandemic H1N1 are symptomatic pandemic H1N1 are shown in the left panel in red with their 95% confidence intervals. Household secondary attack rates from previous pandemic and seasonal influenza viruses, A viruses, are shown in blue on the right in the right panel. Notice that the majority of symptomatic pandemic H1N1 estimates on the left fall within the 4 to 15% range, whereas the majority of estimates for previous influenza A viruses are greater than 15%. While households are believed to play an important role in the community transmission of influenza, the estimated transmissibility of symptomatic pandemic H1N1 in households is too low to explain the observed speed with which that infection spread around the world. We would like to know why this estimated SAR for asymptomatic pandemic H1N1 is so low. One possible explanation is that the household is actually not an important venue for sustaining community transmission of pandemic H1N1. Yet there is little evidence to suggest such a large divergence from the epidemiology of previous influenza A viruses. An alternate hypothesis, bear with me here, is that the household members are misclassified as being at risk for symptomatic pandemic H1N1. Which I'll explain in a minute. Here we illustrate how this type of misclassification could affect the estimated SAR. For an idealized household, the index case of symptomatic pandemic H1N1 is shown in black, and then the people in white, other members in white are red, are at risk for symptomatic pandemic H1N1 or not at risk, respectively. This simplified formula for the SAR illustrates how this type of misclassification could lead to an inflated denominator. For example, if one additional symptomatic pandemic H1N1 case is detected in the household, the estimated SAR, if all members are truly fully at risk, would be 25%, as compared to 50% if the true status of the household was alternatively partially at risk. In this example, an errant fully at risk assumption would lead to a 50% reduction in the SAR. So here's where we illustrate what we consider to be the two unobserved determinants of household members being at risk for symptomatic pandemic H1N1 in this sample. This diagram describes describes the simplified process of infection and subsequent development of symptoms. The two unobserved determinants are shaded in gray. First, a household member may not actually be susceptible for pandemic H1N1 infection due to pre-existing cross-immunity, the prevalence of which is denoted by the parameter alpha. Listed in the lower left, serologic studies of samples collected prior to the pandemic suggest that 2 to 15% of some populations may have possessed antibody-mediated protection before the spring of 2009, before the beginning of the epidemic or pandemic. Second, a susceptible household member may become infected by the pandemic H1N1 virus, but not develop symptoms, and hence remain undetected by typical public health surveillance for symptomatic disease. The second unobserved determinant represents the pathogenicity of the pathogen, and where the pathogenicity proportion is defined as the percent of infections that actually go on to meet the case definition for symptomatic disease, and is represented by 1 minus phi. Listed in the lower right, limited evidence from field and mathematical simulation studies suggests that 41 to 91% of symptomatic or pandemic H1N1 infections during the spring of 2009 may have been asymptomatic. Okay, so the novel nature of our statistical approach is that we define a function, which represents H, which represents the proportion of household contacts in the study population who are not at risk for symptomatic pandemic H1N1. H is a function of alpha and phi, which are the prevalence of pre-existing immunity and the 1 minus the pathogenicity proportion, respectively. When asymptomatic infections are not infectious, we can show that the H function has the following closed form, which I will not go into that derivation right now. For those who are interested, here is how the H function modifies the individual likelihood of an individual's likelihood of escaping symptomatic pandemic H1N1 by the end of the observation time for a household. So, interpretation. We will present both analytic results for both excluding and including H function in our transmission models. The primary differences between the interpretation of these primary difference between the interpretation of these two models modeling approaches is that the household secondary attack rate approach estimated by the non-H model quantifies the transmissibility of symptomatic pandemic H1N1, whereas the SAR from the H model quantifies the more desirable transmissibility of actual pandemic H1N1 infection. It follows that the risk factors effects from the non-H model are a mix of the effects on the risk of infection and the pathogenicity of probability of progressing to disease, and that the risk factor effects estimated by the H model apply solely to the risk of infection. Okay, so the actual data. As an epidemiologist, I sort of like this stuff. We illustrate this novel statistical approach using data from a retrospective cohort study conducted by the County of Los Angeles Public Health Department. Symptomatic pandemic H1N1 was defined as AFRI, or acute febrile respiratory illness, with the case definition listed there. The exposures of interest from this analysis were age group and gender. Households were ascertained when a member presented to a local healthcare department or healthcare provider with AFRI and subsequently tested positive for pandemic H1N1 infection or unsubtypable influenza A. This individual was defined as the household index case, and follow-up telephone interviews were conducted with a responsible member of each index case's household. symptomatic illness and risk factor data were collected from each of the from these household members. Households with complete data were included in the analysis, and we used the chain binomial, as I described before. So the study data set included the households of 58 index cases located in Los Angeles County, California, and 13 co-primary cases in these same households, defined as having illness onset on the same day or on the day before the onset of the index case. Our methods require that we classify these people as indexes also. 228 other household members defined as contacts completed the study population. 28 of these individuals subsequently developed symptomatic pandemic H1N1. The study period lasted from mid-April to mid-May 2009. For epidemiologists, up on the upper panel, that's an epi curve, which plots the frequency distribution of symptomatic pandemic H1N1 cases by their illness onset date. In the lower plot for primary cases, case and non-case household contacts, we give the percentage of people who are under 18, classified as children, in red, and the male in blue. Some basic descriptive stuff. Here we illustrate the impact of including the H. Apparently, I illustrated quickly. Skipped a slide. Here we illustrate the impact of including the H function on the estimated SAR. In the upper left panel, the SAR estimated by the unadjusted non-H model is depicted by a red square, and the SAR from the unadjusted H model is shown in a blue triangle, with the requisite 95% confidence intervals shown as error bars. We used the same symbology to display the results by risk factor category for the age group adjusted and the gender adjusted models. Notice that the point estimates for the H model is consistently higher in value than the point estimate from the corresponding non-H model, as illustrated in the upper and the unadjusted for the unadjusted transmission model here in the upper left panel. This suggests that the non-H model is significantly misclassifying the number of household members who are truly at risk for symptomatic pandemic H1N1. Here we use the same symbology for the previous slide, but we illustrate the H function's impact on the estimated risk factor effects, shown as odds ratios. For this data set, the non-H model estimate is closer to the null than the of 1 than the HS model estimate. This trend demonstrates that the non-H model's misclassification of an individual's at-risk status for symptomatic pandemic H1N1 can affect conclusions about the risk factor's effect on the risk of pandemic H1N1 infection. Okay, the limitations. The key limitation with this method is the assumption that the asymptomatic infections are not infectious. Large assumption for influenza. But sensitivity analysis results suggest that under reasonable conditions, the SAR and the risk factor effects are not very sensitive to this assumption. The primary limitation of our particular data analysis is the lack of available measures for laboratory confirmation of infection and or pre-existing immunity, markers for pre-existing immunity, which would provide internal validation of our estimated SAR for pandemic H1N1. External validation of our novel statistical approach can be seen through a comparison of our estimated SAR of 23% for pandemic H1N1 with that of a study that directly observed this infection. A prospective study conducted in Quebec City during the same time period estimated an SAR of 45%, but this estimate is likely to be biased upward, since it does not account for either infection due to exposure to external sources, nor multiple generations of infection within the household. This suggests that our estimate for the SAR for pandemic H1N1 is consistent with at least one other value published in the literature for laboratory-confirmed infection. In summary, our novel statistical approach extracts additional information from routinely collected outbreak investigation data, namely the transmissibility of actual infection and the effects of potential risk factors on infection itself as an outcome. This additional information will provide more accurate guidance for public health practitioners who are planning response strategies, and to this end, we advocate the application of this method in the analysis of future outbreaks of communicable diseases or close contact of a person-to-person like nature is suspected. Yeah, it's really fast. Okay, so I'd like to thank Anyway, I'd like to thank our funders.